today's world, someone always has to lose. And other people and the winners don't care if the other side loses. They don't care how much agony they inflict on the other. Tomorrow, it's going to be different. We're all going to push the same way. We're all going for the same goal. God remade this earth, and man has done to it the same thing the angels did. We have besmirched everything our hands could get on. We have ruined and befouled the air. We have polluted the waters, the streams, the lakes, even the oceans. Until in many cases, even ocean fish are unfit to eat. We have been trying to tear down and destroy and not to build up. In this booklet, let me just read you a few little quotes. What is actually going to be the outcome of all these things going on today, of the exciting entertainment craze, gadget buying, and chaotic, divided, and sick world is something totally unseen by the statesmen, the scientists, the educators, and the world leaders. They don't see what's wrong today and how it ought to be and how it could be changed. Just a few little things I went through here that I marked may appear in an article again later. Here's a paragraph. Desperately, man wants to save the society he has established upon the earth. You see, Adam rejected God and believed Satan. So Adam cut man off from God, and God adopted a hands-off policy and said, you go build your own world. And God has not tried to save this world, not yet. But I can't get that over where I think most of you believe it. Now, maybe you do. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I am. Some of our ministers and some of the people think you really do believe it. But I think so much Protestantism has rubbed off on us, we think God is desperately trying to get everybody saved today. Only those predestinated to be called. Look, Christ had to confront Satan. Christ had to overcome Satan to qualify to replace him on the throne. Satan is still there on that throne. God has not removed him. And I have said God will not remove him until one has qualified and has also been inducted into office. Christ qualified, but he was not inducted into office. He went to heaven for 1900 years. Why? Because God has given man 6,000 years to work out his own civilization, to work out his own kind of government, his own kind of schools and teaching and education, to work out his own styles and types, not only of government, but of finance, of industry, of everything, agriculture, everything. And the chaos we have is the result. Now, man thinks, and that's somewhere in here, that this world is the final culmination of about 6,000 years. I think I have it over here. People think of civilization as the sum total of everything good that mankind has struggled from the dawn of history to establish. People think of civilization as the advanced, educated, intelligent, well-ordered human society that is built, or something, I wrote over that word, to the point of perfection. It's the arms of human progress. No, the acme of human progress. Perhaps you have accepted that popular assumption. And they believe so that when Christ comes to establish the kingdom of God, they will fight to retain this civilization because they love it. They believe in it. They think it's the very height of civilization. Civilization has come to be a word that means everything good to most people. And this civilization is evil from one end to the other. And Christ is going to come and tear it down. And he's going to build us a world tomorrow. Now, what will it be like? Well, I'll tell you one way to know. I've got so many more things, and time is going on. There is a cause for everything. God's government is based on a law. You can't have a government without a law. And God's law is a way of life, and it's a way of life that would accomplish what God wanted. It's a way of life that would make everybody happy. It is a way that would give us peace. And that way is love. It is an outgoing, an outflowing feeling of love toward others, wanting them to be as happy as yourself. As much concern for their good and their welfare as for your own. That's the way. Now, we can have a football team where they all play together, and too often there's trouble on the team, and that's why the team isn't winning anymore. Basketball, football, baseball. They get rid of a certain player that was causing all the trouble, and then the team begins to win again. But always there's the other team fighting against them in this world. God is going to give us a world where everybody will cooperate, and everybody will love everybody else, and will be concerned with others. Satan believed that lust and greed and vanity and jealousy and envy, hypocrisy, pretense, competition that leads to strife and warfare, and resentment of authority, that those are the qualities that make for a great civilization. And that's what we have. Because Satan has been influencing everybody. The Apostle Paul, 4,000 years after Adam and Eve, said he feared lest the same devil, still alive, still existing, would deceive and influence them at Corinth, even as he had old Mother Eve. So he was still doing it the same way. Although he's invisible to us, we don't see him, and he's got us believing he doesn't exist. He's got us, some people, believing that God exists, but he makes them think that he is God. And that's the world we live in. God isn't trying to save this world. God is leaving this world to itself. Man says, God, get out of my way. What are you sticking your nose in my business for? I have taken to myself the knowledge of what is good and what is evil. Don't you try to tell me what is good and what is evil, as God's law does. So man has made up his own mind of what is good and what is evil. And he's been going that way. And look at what we have. Over half of the world in abject poverty, living in filth and squalor. Over half of the world, total ignorance and uneducated. And in the affluent world, like the United States, one-tenth of the people are off in their upper story mentally and need mental treatment. Hospitals are full, sickness and disease. I've dealt with and come into close contact with the great and the near great, not only around the world, but right here in the United States. The captains of industry, the chairman of the board, and the presidents of the great corporations around Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, New York, Philadelphia. And they're not happy. And I find that even they have one goal, to make money. And they succeed. And when they get it, it isn't enough. And it doesn't make them happy. I don't find happiness in this world, but the way of God is going to give us peace and joy and happiness. Now, when I was 16, I thought this was a great thing. I had my first job away from home, and my employer put his arm on my shoulder and said, "You're going to do great things. Yes, sir, you're destined to do great things. I've got great faith in you. Now, you're going to have to work hard. You're going to have to study. You're going to have to apply yourself. But you can achieve great success." And, you know, he aroused ambition in me. And ambition is the desire to achieve a goal or to have to get, plus the willingness to put forth the effort to get out and get it. Now, Satan will tell you that's a very good thing. That stimulates action to get things done. So that's a good thing, isn't it? Well, most people believe it is. Then later, 2 years later, when I was 18, I chose my goal. I had made a self-analysis on myself, a self-analysis, and also an analysis of the various occupations, vocations, professions, and so on. and I seemed to fit in the field of advertising and journalism. So I chose that. And I was successful because I worked hard, and I was ambitious. But when I was 35, God turned me around and showed me that what I had was Satan's way of get. The peculiar thing is that in my business life, I was always applying God's principle of concern for my customers and the welfare of others. I don't understand why, unless God was training me for a job later on. Because that wasn't human nature. That wasn't Satan doing that. Nevertheless, I found that this ambition and all this self-confidence that had generated, and that self-confidence oozed out of me until I was one of the most conceited, cocky guys you ever saw. I want to tell you, when I was 25 and 26 and 27 and beginning to do business with the great heads of the great businesses and corporations of this country, every so-called great man I met and the heads of the biggest banks in Chicago and New York, I said, I'm more important, I'm bigger than that man. Now, do you know how I reasoned that out? I probably wasn't making 100th, maybe not 1,000th part of the money he was. That wasn't it. I was only, say, 25 years old. He was 55 or 65. By the time I was his age, I was going to be bigger than he is. So therefore, in my mind, I was bigger than he is right now, because I was going to be. I was measuring it by what I would be someday, not what I was then. It was vanity. It was egotism. I was filled with self-confidence. At age 35, I learned that I had to exchange that vanity for humility. I had to come down off that high horse. I learned that I had to find a new kind of faith. Not self-confidence, but faith. Faith in a living Christ. That is the kind of confidence I had to come to have. And I had to start all over. And I did start all over from the smallest beginning. And this work has been the outgrowth. But I didn't do it. I was only an instrument. God did it through me. There isn't hardly an inch of this campus that I can't tell you, if I wanted to use that kind of language, that I thought that out, designed it, and put it there. But you never hear me say that. God put the thought in my mind, and God used me in doing it. And I've been rather proud of the fact, because I know it's God's doing, that 2 years running, we have received the award of having the most beautiful, the best landscaped, and the best maintained campus of any college or university in the United States. I'm sure that the one at Brigham Wood was also the best in England, and of its type and kind, the one at Big Sandy would have the same rating, because there is quality. There is beauty. God is the author of beauty, and God is the author of quality. And some people don't believe in it, because they have been listening to Satan. Satan is the author of darkness, of ugliness, of cheapness, of inferiority, of mediocrity. I don't believe in those things. I never did, and I never will. But if you want to know what it's going to be like in the world tomorrow, you take the two ways, the way of God's law, of outgoing concern for everybody, and of cooperation, of serving, of helping, of working together, and without opposition, all trying to build up something great, something wonderful, something good. And when we get through and after the millennium and we have converted humanity, that's when we're going to go out to win souls for Christ. And after the great white throne judgment that will follow that, then we're going to other planets. And they were created, like I say, the skeleton of the steel framework, but not finished. But today, they are all degenerated. They are decayed. And decay means they had once been better and they have gone down. The change has taken place. That is not the way they were originally created. And the decay that came to other planets and our solar system, and our astronomers can't see far enough to know what goes on beyond that. We just know that there are our solar system is part of a galaxy, and there are many galaxies and so on. And we're going to build up the rest of the whole universe. We're going to repair the damage that's been done first. Then we're going to build onto a great superstructure that God has put there. And we're going to make it beautiful. And if you don't believe in beautiful, in beauty and character and quality, you won't be there. And you don't belong in this church now if you don't believe in those things. You really don't, because that is God's way. That is the character of God. And we have to accept, we have to receive his character within us. Now, you take what goes on and everything that man does and apply the principle of giving, of cooperating, of helping to it, and you'll begin to see what's going to happen in the world tomorrow. Read this booklet again. There's a whole lot in it about it. I'm not trying to describe it so much today as to tell you what we've learned, to tell you that I have repented. And that my leadership is going to change this whole work around. And God has given me the authority as its leader to do it. So far as that's concerned, I don't think I'm going to have a bit of trouble. Every minister in this church is going to be 100% with me. Because I think they see that at a glance. And we just haven't realized that we have been preaching the bad news of today's world. As we have. I'm sure we haven't realized it. And I'm sure that the ministers are 100% with me in it. And they'll have to be, because that's the way it's going to be, and nobody's going to be a minister in this church that isn't willing to go along and proclaim the good news, the wonderful good news of the wonderful world tomorrow. We're going to build up, and we're going to be constantly, we'll become God. And we will envision great things, and we'll be thinking of great things ahead. And we'll always be anticipating great achievement, great accomplishment. And we'll always be looking back on great achievements and great accomplishments and great happiness that we have achieved. You can get all excited and thrilled about this game tomorrow. How can you replace that with God's way? Oh, how much greater will it be to think of the great things we can do, to look ahead to doing it, and to getting it done. If you're going to build a new home, or furnish a new home, what a wonderful ecstasy it is to think about it and plan it. If you're going to take a trip and you've never traveled before, and you're going to get to maybe go abroad somewhere, will you sleep it, you think it? You're always looking forward to something, for there's something good that's going to come to you. That's what we'll be doing. We'll be anticipating great things. We'll be thinking great things and great thoughts. We'll be accomplishing great things. And when we think of the good we're doing to others and how much good we have done to them, that's going to give us a joy and a happiness beyond anything that you can describe. So we're going to preach the good news. And less of the bad news. Just enough of the bad news to make them understand how good the good news is going to be. There's a wonderful world tomorrow just around the door, around the corner. Sure, the great tribulation is coming first. God isn't going to let it happen until man has come to the place where maybe the last two men alive would kill each other. But that isn't going to be too long. This way, we have to prove that this way is wrong. We have to prove. God is insisting that it be proved that his way and his way only is right. And he's taking 6,000 years to do it, and then 1,000 years he's going to save humanity. And yet, those that have seen the results and have been starting to live the right way, as soon as Satan is let loose at the end of the millennium, hundreds of millions will turn wrong again. And that'll be the end of them, though. Everybody who ever lived is going to be resurrected. And there will be a time, I still think that 100 years is a very possible interpretation of that little place in Isaiah 65, but whether it is or not makes no difference. I don't care. God knows how long it's going to take. Whether it's going to be 1 year, 100 years, 1,000 years, or what. It'll be the amount of time God knows it's going to take. Everybody is going to see the result and have tasted until they get a stomach so full of Satan's evil ways and they get so bitter that they want to vomit it all up and they want to come to God's way of glory and happiness and peace and everything joyful forever on, because there is the great life, the good life, everything abundant is just around the corner and coming. Now we have to prove this thing first, or people wouldn't understand it and they wouldn't enjoy it. But we're getting very close to it. We have come to the time and a generation. You know, you can count a generation not from how long you figure it takes until you're old enough to bear your first child. But you go back to the time of Noah, and that generation would all die from 20 and up. So the oldest at that time must have been around 80 to 100 years of age at least. So subtract 20 from that, and you've got... God called me back in 1933. We haven't got too much time to go, but there could be another 10 or 20 years. God knows, I don't. I don't know how much time we have left. But the job's going to get done. Now someone says, yes, but Mr. Armstrong, you haven't shaken the world to its very foundation with this message. You haven't accomplished anything yet, Mr. Armstrong. Brethren, God didn't call me to shake the world. You read back in Haggai where God is going to shake the world to its foundation. God is going to shake this world, not Herbert Armstrong. Not Garnet Head Armstrong. Not this church. He has not given us that kind of power, and we don't possess it. But we are getting the warning out, and we are announcing the kingdom of God, and we're going to go on announcing it, and we're going to begin to paint a prettier picture from this moment on. I promise you that.